Pilgrim's Hospice, Margate. It's early, very early in the morning. Claudia, the hospice cat, stalks quiet corridors. The nurse with the drug keys in her pocket jangles as she walks. Zoe has nearly finished her shift.
You get to know your patients more on a night shift, I find. And sometimes nighttime you can be sitting with them all night, trying to calm them or just be with them.
How do you calm them?
Just talk to them, or sometimes just sitting there holding their hand is good enough for some patients.
Has anybody told you a story that's really touched you?
Yeah, quite a few times.
What's it like when somebody tells you a story like that?
Oh, you feel lucky.
Hepatocarcinoma. That's a cancer in the liver. So I'm living on borrowed time, as it were. Yeah.
What's that like?
What, living on borrowed time? Don't care.
Frank started out in London, working class poor, charmed and chanced his way to a life as a travel agent to the wealthy, who liked him so much they invited him on their trips. Loves lobster, nice suits, first-class flights, once complimented on his driving by Stirling Moss.
I mean, I care for my family and those that I'm going to leave behind, but I don't care about it for me. Well, I'm 86, coming up next month, so I'm satisfied.
What are you satisfied with?
My life. Wouldn't do a single thing differently. That's satisfaction. Of course, it's all reflected in my family, you see, my boys. And my eldest son is 62 now, so. And the twins are about 55. But crackers about them. And I hope they are about me.
What's your wife's name?
Beryl. Beryl Elizabeth. We've been married 63 years. 1949. Yeah, she's wonderful.
Why is she wonderful?
I think she proved it in the last 3 years, looking after me, because I'm finished in respect of how I used to be, but she still cares for me and does everything for me. Oh.
Can you describe her to me?
Yeah, she's beautiful. She just smiles and smiles. And she loves me. Unbelievable, isn't it?
What's the secret?
Well, the secret is care and tolerance and love. And, well, if you can find it, it is wonderful. But it's rare.
Somebody brought a letter round from one of the patients, just a little notelet for something just that I'd done generally one day, and they said, thank you so much, it was so lovely.
What had you done?
I think it was just like an egg on toast, or just something really simple. And sometimes I've had a little note on a serviette to say thank you for my breakfast. I really don't know how that person needed to actually say thank you to somebody on that day for something we take for granted. It's a different environment and different meaning to things.
Do you need to stir your vegetables?
Yeah.
Early morning, the day patients are arriving, delivered by volunteer drivers. Day patients have a terminal illness, but are still well enough to live out in the community. They visit the hospice a day a week for months, sometimes years, to meet each other and talk to the doctors. Sally is a newcomer to Day Hospice. That's not her real name, but she likes the idea of being anonymous. It's more mysterious, we agree. When she was little, she used to sneak out to a farmer's field, climb on a horse, and pretend to be Annie Oakley. She hates being called a housewife. She says she's a domestic engineer.
I've got into the habit of waking up very early nowadays, about 5 o'clock, unfortunately, because I suppose the brain's a bit muddled up at the moment. So I just get up and put a little bit of washing on and say, I will take everything in my stride. And if I see anyone outside that's looking a bit down in the dumps, I'll have a little natter with them. And if I can get a little smile on their face, then I feel I've achieved something. Especially old folks, they love people to talk to them. And I'd always ask their advice if I see them in the garden. Folks like that, because it makes them feel needed.
Do you think you see people in a different way since your illness?
Yes, very much so. Yes, I think people feel they need to open up. They want to open up, not need to, sorry, want to. And I think human beings are like little volcanoes. It's all bubbling up inside. And then just something triggers it off and out it all comes. And I find there'll be nattering away to you, so I often say, let's go and have a coffee. I'll get you a coffee and a sticky bun. This week's been a bit tough. I haven't been able to get out of bed very well because I've had very bad headaches and dizziness. But, yes, I don't want to end up a recluse. No way. I work for Canterbury Cathedral in retail, and it's so nice because we get people from all over the world come to visit Canterbury, as you could probably well imagine. It's nice talking to the foreign folks. I don't speak any foreign languages, and it makes them laugh when I'm trying to say good morning, goodbye, in their term of, and they stand there laughing at me. They think it's hilarious. So again, I've conquered something. I've made someone laugh. But at the moment, I've had to give up work because of this aggressive thing. Tumour.
Does it feel very real to you?
Yes. Oh, yes, yes. I often get cross with it. I mean, yes, it will beat me, this tumour. It will. There's no two ways about it. But many times over the past years, I've thought to myself, I wonder what I'd do, how I'd react if I knew I'd got a terminal condition. So now I think I'm coping with it.
Are you surprised by how you've reacted?
Actually, yes, I am. Because I haven't shed a tear over this at all. If I laugh about something, to me, that is an achievement. But if I were to look in the mirror and end up in floods of tears, then it would have beaten me.
The day patients sit in a circle of big blue armchairs in the downstairs lounge. These day sessions are many people's introduction to the hospice, the first time they cross its threshold. They find a friendly world where they can get haircuts, health advice and glitter tattoos. Volunteers and nurses bring them cakes and cups of tea. And then there are the games, usually run by a member of staff. Chris.
We play with the balls and we have races. We sometimes play hockey.
How do you play hockey when everybody's stuck in a chair?
Yeah, we line up the chairs across the middle of the room, give them walking sticks, give them a goal each end, and then they just go for it. And the competitive spirit, and so the least likely people comes out. It's absolutely hilarious. You see people whacking a plastic ball from one end of the hospice to the other. They serve drinks before lunch.
Do they like a tipple?
Yeah, quite a lot of them do. We have to get beer in or gin in for a gin and tonic. Not going out for a drink anymore. And it's really nice to come in and have a beer before your lunch.
I'll
give you the menu though, I know you'll know what you want. Roast lamb, roast potatoes, vegetables and gravy, a cheese and pineapple salad, a vegetable stir fry and egg noodles.
Cheese and pineapple salad, that sounds nice.
And apple crumble and custard.
Oh, lovely, thank you. Yes to that.
Custard.
Looking forward to that. We didn't have much breakfast.
After lunch, generally, is sleep. Alcohol, lunch. So that happens in the afternoons, as well as, you know, we have quizzes, raffles, and dominoes. The lads have got a dominoes team where the banter's always loads of fun.
There's a surprising amount of beauty for a place that deals in death.
Yeah, I agree. And a surprising amount of laughter. Sometimes that's difficult. That's really difficult for people. Especially when they first come, they suddenly realise, oh, I can still laugh. I can still laugh. I can still do a painting and make something out of clay. And I thought I'd never do... Oh, I've never done anything like that before. But it's still worth doing it. We've had some amazing people who'd never touched a paintbrush since they were six, and they're 70 or 80 now. They've been told they might have 2 months, and they're painting at home and bringing it in. That's marvellous. Yeah, that's a joy. That's what makes my job worth doing.
Have you had a cake?
Yeah. Anyone like the monkeys?
Oh, yeah.
The monkeys.
Bill Williams, born 9th of April 1928. Just one double bed for my parents and myself, and we had to live like that until I was 11 years old. My mother was a bread earner, and everybody loved her.
And what about your dad?
A terrible man. He drank too much, he was a wife beater. So I made up my mind at one time not to get married. I did eventually change my mind, thanks to my mother, who said, well, it doesn't have to be like this, it can be out of this world.
Bill, master of the quick step, septuagenarian footballer, office manager in his prime, tells me the story of his three loves. Wife one ran away with another man, a Flash Harry, Bill says. Heartbroken and lonely, he joined a ballroom dancing club to cheer himself up.
Most of these ladies seemed to be going for Latin, and I was into this ballroom. And I thought, I'm not going to mix them up, I'm going to concentrate on the ballroom. And I danced with the lady, so she said, oh, she said, it's just my luck and your luck, I'm into Latin. I'm like, oh, curses. And she said, dance with my sister. She's into ballroom. I thought, oh, good. I said, I'll be over later on. Where is your sister? So she said, that's her in the blue dress over there. I looked at her, my heart sunk. I thought, another teenage lady.
Hmm? What did she look like across the room?
Oh, lovely. But a teenager. They're good company and that, but I didn't want to settle down with a teenager. They were too young for me. And I had a dance with her, and much to my surprise, I found she wasn't a teenager at all. She was 32.
Bill had 14 happy years with his second wife. He nursed her when she was diagnosed with breast cancer. And when she died, he thought his life was over again. But then he met another lady, Jo. She was always singing and loved to give parties. He accepted when she proposed. They had a mutual interest in the stage.
I was in, there's been 180-something plays or productions. The serious stuff, Agatha Christie, that sort of thing. And my wife was in musicals, dancing on tables in cabaret and that sort of thing. And come to the cabaret, all legs and, well, you know the outfit, I'm sure. Unfortunately, last December, she contracted, well, she must have had it all the time, this asbestos cancer. And then when we got the death notice, I had this idea that instead of celebrating like most people do at the wake afterwards, why not have it before? I thought, what a funny thing to think. It appealed to me, and I thought it might appeal to her. And much to my surprise, she said, oh, what a lovely idea, I think I'd like that. So I arranged this party in Margate. We were even able to give a song and dance, naturally being in the show business. And it was only when she eventually died that I became more ill. It's amazing, I just had enough to care for her. So I've been lucky, I've had three lots of 14. I love them with every ounce of my energy and my heart that I had. I couldn't love them anymore, any of them. When you reach, I'm 85 now, coming up to 86, naturally you think about death and dying. There's a bit of a mystery there, some of you haven't done before and some of you have all got to do. But to me, there's still more of a mystery to love. I'm still learning about love.
A band come to play for the day patients. This is Bill's request.
That's the night we met. It was magic abroad in the air. There were angels dining at the Ritz, and the nightingale sang in Berkeley Square.
Nursing, you're encouraged to put this boundary up. It's not about relationships, it's about nursing. But as far as I'm concerned, that's utterly impossible. It's impossible. It's impossible for me. And I'm sure it is for lots of the other nurses as well. We see those people week in, week out, sometimes for years. And I've regarded that as really special. And feeling grief for somebody is also really special for me.
In what way?
You're sharing in their existence, I guess.
Five, four, three, two, one, we're off.
Okay.
Right, we're all lost now. You're lost now. Why are you lost?
Well,
you're usually full
you
of words.
You won six games today and...
And it's gone to my head, I know.
That's fine, yeah. Yeah, we're having a good day. Are you having a good day? Are you
I was
now?
Until I lost.
That's right.
I'm sorry, she's not answering the phone. Can I take a message and I'll ask her to call you?
This is Maureen. Her illness makes it hard for her to talk, but she lets me record when she plays with her wheelchair. She likes to make it beep.
Hello? Late afternoon. Back on the ward with the hospice's inpatients. Homemade blankets on the beds. Fresh flowers in the vases. A quiet time of day.
Are there signs that let you know that someone is coming towards death?
Yeah, they can become quite white and just lay still and just let it happen. Or sometimes people do put up a fight and they'll fight it till the end. It can be difficult when they do fight, though, because they're just thrashing around in the bed. They just won't rest. We're trying the best we can do, but they're fighting us, really. Not only are they fighting us, they're fighting themselves. We're not making them comfortable. We're not making them peaceful. We can't do anything if they want to fight.
And is it a fight that anybody ever wins?
No. But it's worth fighting for, though, isn't it?
Christine hasn't told her friend she's ill. It's my business, nobody else's, she says. She's a foster mum and looks after little children at a home in Deal, on the seafront.
In the winter, the wind just whips the door away. All the washing gets covered in salt, all the cars get covered in salt. Here's the sea, here it's thumping on the promenade. And you miss it when you don't hear it.
Really?
Yeah, oh yes, yeah. If you go away and you can't hear it, you're thinking, I'm missing something, what am I missing? Yeah, you know? And the birds, the seagulls, and that was something with Sophie. I used to put a high chair near the door, and she used to feed the birds with the toast she didn't want. And they used to come in the bloody house, little monkey. She wasn't afraid of them. Everything was a duck to her. And they brought her one night at, it must have been about 11 o'clock at night, and they put her in the cot beside my bed. And I thought, oh, you know, she's going to wake up and scream the place down. She woke up in the morning, she slept all night, great big smile on her face and put her arms up for a cuddle. And we became friends from that day on. It was really hard parting with her, but I had her for 18 months. And she's just going through the adoption process now.
That sounds pretty meaningful.
Yeah, it is a meaningful job, yeah. If I was to have my time again, I think I might do it a bit earlier. But circumstances weren't the right time, you know.
Can I ask why you're here?
I've got cancer of the esophagus. And it's just grown, and that's why I'm here. And I just think it's a fantastic opportunity. In a strange sort of way, I know people would think I'm a bit weird, but because I want certain things done. I was a bit upset because I couldn't give my organs to be donated because of the cancer, but I can leave my eyes and my skin, possibly. So I feel that I'm able to do something for somebody else and plus do something for the people that are left behind.
What have you been doing for them?
I've started doing the memory box with children, like 18th and 21st cards in there. Put Christmas card in there for this year and put some money in there, £20 in there. You're just clutching at straws of what to do to make their life a little bit easier and make them, help them to understand a little bit more.
With my lack of knowledge, I would expect you to be fairly occupied with yourself.
Well, no.
You're not,
No, not at all.
Why is that?
Well, because I've had my life and it's their life that's important and I want them to be able to carry on. I mean, I've had a good chat with my son and his wife about finances, about selling the house, and that they mustn't waste the money because youngsters do. I'm writing all the letters that they're going to have to write to the gas, electric and all those sorts of companies. So all they've got to do is sign them and send them off, put the date on so that they know. And I just think it's important that Mum's still there to help them. I'd like to think that you are sitting up there a bit like a soap and you can watch them. Oh, what's happening down there tonight? I'll watch that. That would be nice, but of course, obviously, that's not reality, is it?
I think everywhere calls it Rose Cottage, actually. It's nicer than saying the mortuary or the morgue. The first thing I do is make sure that all the curtains are closed. And I tend to open a window because they say that the soul goes, it escapes. I always start with the hands and face and brush their hair. If they've got dentures, then we put the dentures in. Then we work down the body by washing the chest, the armpits. I tend to put a bit of talcum powder on because everybody knows what talcum powder smells like. And never the hospital pyjamas. We always try and put a nice nightie or nice pyjamas on them. I mean, you still carry on talking to your patient even when they've gone. I'm just going to wash your arm, or I'm just going to do this. And you still keep the towels there for dignity, and you know that you've done the best care for them. Well, we always put them on the trolley and put them in the fridge, but we always say goodnight to them. I've just realised that. Yeah, we always say goodnight and, or God bless and sleep well, something like that.
Is that the moment somebody's really dead?
Yeah. I suppose for us it is.
Is that birds?
What's your name?
Miss Patricia Varrell, or Pat to most people.
Pat Varrell, nearly 80, fell over and broke her neck a while back. She said it sounded like twigs snapping. Never married. Hers has been a life of service, she tells me. We talk about her faith and about music.
If someone were going to write a piece of music for you, how would you want it to make you feel?
I'd want a piece of music that was like these ones with snapshots, you know, like the Planet Suite or Peter and the Wolf or a peaceful bit, a happy bit, one that shows beauty and one that shows love, but also ones that show sorrow and grieving and even doubt and fear, because it all comes into life. You know, doubt and fear and sorrow, they come into life, but it's not a dominant part. And the dominant part, the bit at the end, would be a crescendo of praise and then petering off to just calm ripples of peaceful little stream.
Is that your life in a piece of music, really?
I suppose so, yes.
You got me in tears now.